Republic of Congo has reduced significantly as testing ramps up. BBC News.
Read this evening by Vijay Ellis. This is BBC Radio 4. Stand-up comedy is next.
When the situation is all too familiar, when the characters are a bit too close to home, when you just can't help but laugh at it all.
Your mum does that all the time.
My mum? You do that all the time.
I don't. Do I? Maybe. Do I?
Nothing brings us together like great TV. And a TV licence covers you to watch all TV channels, plus BBC iPlayer, so you can keep laughing along with your favourite sitcoms. It also funds everything you love from the BBC, including Radio 4. Find out more at tvl.co.uk.
Now on BBC Radio 4, let's dive headfirst into the subject of water. Ian Smith is stressed.
Hello and welcome to Ian Smith is Stressed, a comedy show all about stress and my fumbling attempts at relaxation. It's time to chill out. Why not put this on before you go to bed and drift off to a deep, relaxing sleep? You might be thinking, surely that's not very good for you, Ian. This is a comedy show. You want people to be laughing. Not really. As long as it's on, it all counts as listener figures. I want you to think of this show like a warm bath, the location of approximately 200,000 domestic injuries in the UK every year. I've been very busy recently, and working all the time is stressful. You know, one recommendation that I read for de-stressing is finding the humour in stressful situations. But that is my job. That's bad advice. Like, oh, you're feeling burnt out, Ian? Why don't you try going to work? But go to work I will, all in the name of finding the secret to a stress-free life. The level of research I've done for this series is astonishing. Whether it's Googling something or looking on Wikipedia, I will stop at nothing. The world is a stressful place. We're so reliant on technology that if the internet goes down for 5 minutes, everyone loses their minds. We're so vulnerable. That's why I have started printing out the internet, so I've always got it on hand. Is it costing me a lot of money? Yes. Is it making me feel calmer, though? Well, no. I keep trying to refresh the BBC News homepage and getting paper cuts. I'm constantly being told my password isn't strong enough. That's annoying me as well. It's infuriating. Does anyone here know what my Mountain Warehouse password is? No? Then it is strong enough, isn't it? It is strong enough. That's all a password is. Do I know it? Yeah. Does anyone else know it? No. Then we are fine. And by Mountain Warehouse as well. Oh no, the hackers are going to get a load of discount cagoules. Oh, it's got to have a number in it and a special character. Yeah, how about I don't have any of those? Because that's the last thing they'll expect. I'm double bluffing them. All of my passwords are just Ian Smith, all lowercase. Why? Because no one would think I could be that stupid. This week, I'm finally addressing the very stressful subject of water. The influential English poet Samuel Taylor Coleridge wrote, "Water, water everywhere, nor any drop to drink." You don't get that with any other food or drink, though, do you? Where it exists, but for some reason you can't have it. Coleridge never wrote, "Ham, ham, all about, but not a slice to put in my mouth." And that's why he'll never be considered one of the greats. There are so many unanswered questions about water. If bobbing for apples is so fun, why is bobbing for sandwiches so disgusting? And if I drink enough holy water, does that make my urine holy urine? And if not, how can I apologise to the 4 children I baptised? It's funnier the less you picture it. People insist on telling us that water is good for us, and yet it's the cause of death in nearly 100% of drownings. Not quite all of them. There was one very embarrassing incident with some condensed milk. But water really seems to relax people, which is probably what makes it so difficult to do anything about the rising sea levels. Yes, we might lose Scarborough, but think of the relaxing sound of the waves lapping against the Bullring shopping centre in Birmingham. A lot of people say their best ideas come to them when they're in the shower. That's why I always have my laptop in the shower, so I can write things down when... Right, that sentence isn't finished. Yeah, I guess that's when my laptop stopped working. In this episode, I'm going to explore why water stresses me out so much. Maybe it's because I'm a terrible swimmer and water can quite easily kill me. Or maybe it's because everyone is saying I have to drink more for my health, but all I seem to be able to consume is fizzy drinks, fruit juice and hot chocolates like a 9-year-old boy. To help me kick the fizzy habit, I'm going to get hypnotised live on stage. And to help me not drown, I'll be taking a water survival class and learning how to turn my jeans into a life vest. Will I live to see the end of the episode, or will my partner receive a huge compensation payout from the BBC? I know which one she'd prefer. So, get on your swimming trunks, whack on some goggles, and take a deep breath. We're about to go under and explore the murky world of water. What's everyone's favourite drink?
Beer.
Beer, whiskey, water. One boring person on the front row. Boo! Water is boring. Water is the most boring drink on the planet. It's the Keir Starmer of liquids. What are you having for your meal deal? Oh, a bottle of water, ready salted crisps and a ham sandwich, but I'll take the ham out. Then I pour the water onto the bread and the crisps, I mix it all up into a paste and I just rub it into myself and let it absorb into my body through my skin. I really don't like tasting stuff. Now, flavoured water I can get on board with. Squash, even better. But what is this battle against flavour that has plagued the modern drinks world? Drinks now say things like, with a hint of lemon. Why are you hinting at it? Make it lemony. Why are we ashamed of the lemons? We need to make lemons great again. It's all stuff like water with the distant memory of peach. Water with the subtle side glance of mango. Water with the ghost of blueberries and the long distant memory of the touch from a former lover. A touch so close that if you close your eyes tight enough, you might almost feel it again, but not quite. A memory so close, but simultaneously so distant that it can make you doubt it ever existed, but mourn to feel it again, of raspberry. I've got a sweet tooth, what can I say? You're telling me Dr. Pepper's bad for me? It was invented by a doctor. Oh, but scientists say... I don't care what scientists say. What good drinks have scientists ever made? The only scientist I'll listen to is Professor Wheatos, who invented Wheatos. I like that guy. My point is, all these scientists, they never want us to have anything fun. They're the ones who took all the cocaine out of Coca-Cola and the asbestos out of Fanta. In the old days, everything had something bad in it, but it tasted better. I was brought up on Turkey Twizzlers and Panda Pops before Jamie Oliver came along and ruined everything with his deep concern for the health of children. I've got to drink more water. I've got to get off the fizzy drinks. But I've got to an age where drinking a lot of water is a dangerous move. When I go to a toilet now, I do that old person thing of having a piss, putting everything away, and then immediately doing a little bonus piss. A urinary encore, if you will. A golden ovation. I've only wet myself once as an adult, so far. I was about 23 and I was coming back to my house after a night out, long, long bus journey, and I'm desperate to go, but I'm holding it in. I get off the bus, I'm about 5 minutes away from my house, and I think, I can do this. I'm passing alleyways thinking, you could just go now. No, I say to myself, keep your dignity, Ian, keep going. I put my keys in the door, I rush up to the bathroom, and I don't know if you've ever had this before, but as soon as I opened the bathroom door, my penis and bladder seem to go, well, we've made it. Oh, thank God for that. Let's get going. I'm like, whoa, 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 not yet. It's too late. It's coming out. But what I did, luckily, the way I was sort of hanging, the urine was just going down one leg. So I got up and stood on my bath and I just positioned the leg into the toilet. And I used my leg as a sort of funnel system. Don't judge me, remember, I'm a 23-year-old adult. I'm thinking to myself, you've dealt with this really well. Trousers off, put them in the wash, quick shower. I went to sleep that night feeling pretty proud of myself. That's a nice thing to feel after wetting yourself as an adult. Pride at a job well done. And in a move that I'm going to frame as destigmatising a weak bladder, I want to open this up to the audience and ask, has anyone in the room wet themselves as an adult? And I should probably add before we do this, in a way that is entertaining as opposed to a serious medical issue that will kill the atmosphere of the show. But does anyone feel comfortable? Has anyone put your hand up? Can we get a microphone to that person and have a little chat? What's your name?
Michael. How's it going?
Michael, how's it going? It's going very well, thank you.
Yeah, good.
How
good.
Are you?
Yeah, good, good. Dry, you know.
Dry. Well, talk us through it. How old were you?
Oh, it was like a year ago, you know.
Wow. How old are you now?
29.
Oh, that's okay. 28. Yeah. Right, the audience are not getting on board with. I'm trying to make him feel better here. 28. Where were you?
Prague, to be fair.
Prague, to be fair. Yeah, okay. And I imagine the people of the Czech Republic are like, yeah, well, to be fair, you're in Prague, of course. That's why you come to the capital city of our country, to wet yourself. But were you on, like, a stag do or something?
Yeah.
What, whereabouts? Talk us through it.
We're on a boat party, you know, and then, like, woke up back at the gaff and, like, you know... I seen the eyes from the other people, and I was like, what have I done? What have I done? And they were like, oh, you, like, you know. It was a bit worse than wetting myself, to be honest.
Uh-oh. Yeah, I mean, you seem to have really taken all this in your stride. And what did you do when you'd kind of discovered it had happened? How did you react? Were you mortified? Were you sort of like, I don't know, I can deal with this, I'm in Prague.
I just went for a shower with my pal.
Well, it's rare that two guys shower together on a stag do anyway.
He wasn't showering, he just came with me to shower me, you know.
Oh, that is a good friend. A friend who is willing to basically pressure wash feces off your body.
Yeah.
Yeah, and are you still friends now?
No.
Right, it's just scarred him too much. Well, it's been lovely chatting to you. Quite a sad end to that story, but thank you very much for sharing. I hope you're happy for that to go out on the radio. But this is a big thing for me. I've had to get into drinking water. I've got to hydrate more. And I'm taking the easy way out. Who needs willpower when you can just have a hypnotist tap into your subconscious and do it that way? Can a hypnotist help me stop the pop? Can they put the bubble to the rubble? Can they stop me jizzing for a fizzing? Can they make me have another think about whether I need that carbonated drink? Will they be the tonic for my tonic? Will they make me say, oh, nah, to soda. Right. Yeah, that is it for them now. Now, this has been one of the most problematic parts of the series, and in a way you wouldn't imagine. There are very strong rules governing how hypnotism can be shown on TV or the radio, in what all seems to be aimed at not accidentally hypnotising the general public who are watching or listening. This is genuine. You need to jump through a lot of legal hoops for this. So, to mitigate the danger and make sure we've dotted all the I's and crossed all the T's, which is actually needed when you're spelling the word hypnotism, we've invited Debbie from the council to come and explain a bit more about it. So please welcome over here, it's Debbie from the council! So, Debbie, can you explain a bit about what these rules are?
So, I don't want to spoil anybody's fun here tonight, but we will need to abide by the 1952 Hypnosis Act, which does prohibit any public performance of hypnosis without a licence. So, of course, there is the licence to perform hypnosis that you need. We also need a thorough background check of the hypnotist's credentials.
Yep.
We're going to have to get our public liability insurance going, and you can't broadcast any Hypnosis Act on air in its full form, and also any participants must be thoroughly dehypnotised in a timely fashion.
We've got it covered. So, within the rules, we are excited to welcome our hypnotist, and judging by all that, the most dangerous woman in the world, it's Madame Da Costa. Does seem like a lot of trouble to get you here.
I guess hypnotism is sort of quite misunderstood. So I can understand why people would be a bit concerned about its use.
Yeah, and sort of I completely agree with that. I understand the concern. So what we've decided to do instead of everything that Debbie said is we're just going to hypnotise Debbie so that we can do whatever we want.
No, that's sorry. Debbie, that is fantastic.
Debbie, when you wake, you will simply believe that you've been judging a marmalade-making competition. There has been no hypnotism. Is that okay?
Great, well, I'm very happy with that. Okay, well, it's time to get on with this. Madame da Costa is now going to hypnotise me into not wanting fizzy drinks. I'm pretty sceptical about hypnotism.
And sleep. Okay, Ian, just relax. Take a deep breath in. And as you breathe out, I want you to go deep down into the part of you that desperately needs that quench, the thirst for the fizzy drink. And when you see a fizzy drink, you will be repulsed. And think of the money you're wasting on those drinks. And what you're gonna do is you're gonna give that money to me. Give your money to Madame and throw away your addiction to fizzy drinks. You are no longer addicted. And Ian, I'm gonna bring you back into the room now, so deep breath, and you're back in the room.
About whether it works.
How do you feel?
I don't really feel anything, to be honest. Maybe that's a bit of an anticlimax, really, I suppose. Sorry for wasting your time. There's 20 quid, if you'd like that. I have the wallet, actually. The code for my bank card's 4357. There's also a Monzo, that's 3281.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, can you undo Debbie before we go?
You're back in the room.
Really wonderful preserves all round, everybody. Thank you so much. Spectacular. Thank you.
Okay, great. Well, let's hear it for Debbie from the council and Madame da Costa, everyone. Yeah, well, it's not just water, the drink, by the way, that's stressing me out. It's water in a broader sense. Basically, what I'm trying to say is I'm not a good swimmer. I was never a good swimmer in school. I got more verrucas than I did lengths of the pool. Now, I'm sure I don't need to tell you this, and it's probably the main reason you've come to this recording, but in 2015, I was in a BBC One adaptation of Noah's Ark. That's right, fans. You're looking at Ham, Noah's son. Not to be mistaken with Gammon, Noah's cousin, who was less concerned with building a big boat and more concerned with stopping the small boats. The son of Noah, me, helping build an ark in the desert, despite having the complexion of the ghost of a Victorian schoolboy. Our adaptation focused on the personal struggle of Noah and his relationship with family rather than the actual flood, you know, the only exciting bit of the story. We also, I think quite cleverly, breezed over the bit where every single animal on the planet walks up in a pair and comes on board with absolutely no problems whatsoever. We'd already used up the CGI budget, giving me a tan. But I got the part, and a few weeks before we started filming, the producer said to me, "Just checking you can swim, Ian." And I said, yeah, of course I can. You know when you say yeah so many times it stops feeling reassuring? Yeah, yes! But as an actor, you've got to put these things on your CV in the hope that they make you look accomplished, but you'll never actually be asked to do them. Like, I've got it down that I'm an accomplished archer, but I have, in fact, never appeared on The Archers. So I had to get adult swimming lessons. The guy teaching me didn't seem at all impressed with my level one badge. He did his best to teach me, but the swimming scene I'm in starts with me in the shot and ends with me no longer visible. Why? Because I am under the water and I am drowning. Space is actually the only thing scarier than oceans. There's a quote from Arthur C. Clarke, and it said, "There are two possibilities. Either we're alone in the universe or we're not, and both are equally terrifying." They're not equally terrifying, though, are they? Imagine if someone said that to you about your house. There's two possibilities. You're either alone in your house or you're not. And they're equally terrifying. They're not Arthur. Who's in my house? But water is getting scarier because global warming means sea levels are rising. And just for BBC balance, I'd also like to say, I love fracking. Long story short, I need to be a better swimmer. For fun, for safety, and for the impending water-based apocalypse. So I decided to book a water safety class with a swimming expert who can teach me how to survive in water. But they're not going to be teaching me how to bob about calmly in a swimming pool. No, I want to be protected from the worst case scenario. I'm going to be taught how to survive being dunked in the water in an emergency setting and turn what I'm wearing into a survival kit. The scenario I've built up in my head. I'm going to go on an all-inclusive cruise to do some much-needed writing for my new TV series idea, Noah's Ark 2, Back to the Floods. The cruise hits an iceberg. I'm flung overboard, fully clothed, but for some reason the ocean is about as hot as a heated swimming pool at a fitness first. Can I turn my sodden clothes into a life jacket and float away to safety? Let's find out. I met with my instructor, Mina, from Immerse, who is going to assess my swimming ability.
Not a great swimmer, and I've been told you're the person who can help me survive in the deep seas.
I am certainly going to do my best.
Oh, that's not quite as reassuring as I thought.
I think if we can sink, float, and maybe move around a little bit, that will put us in a good place to build off of.
Okay. I think I can definitely float. I imagine I can sink.
Okay.
I'm thinking of sinking as in when I die.
Yeah, but no, we're thinking sinking intentionally.
Intentionally sinking.
And practicing breathing out under the water.
Breathing out under the water, but not breathing in.
Exactly.
Okay.
That would be not ideal.
Yes, not ideal is certainly an understatement, as I immediately discovered. Before we started, I was curious to know if Mina works with a lot of people who find swimming as anxiety-inducing as I do.
Yeah, I've had quite a few people who, for the first two or three lessons, won't even let go of the edge. They're just like that frightened of the water. But I find that with enough time, everyone can kind of get the hang of it.
Yeah. And how often do you teach these kind of survival-level skills in swimming?
Not super often. Most people just want to be able to swim up and down the pool for a little bit of exercise.
Yeah, that really doesn't interest me. I want to be able to survive.
The first step before we got into survival swimming was to have a thorough assessment of my swimming ability. I was asked to swim just as I would naturally, and I'm not exaggerating to say that my performance elicited genuine horror from the spectators. Wait until you hear this damning feedback.
Slow it down. You're rushing. Yeah. It looks tense.
Yeah. That was instructor speak for Ian, you're waterboarding yourself.
I've got a lot of water up my nose. I'm sort of, my big problem is breathing. And I think now people behind me are discussing the likelihood that I'm going to die.
Despite the nerves about my swimming ability with just trunks on, we moved on to the survival swimming exercise. This would involve me entering the pool fully clothed, stripping off, then removing my jeans, and through something I can only describe as alchemy, inflating those jeans and using them as a makeshift life preserver. I would do this without my feet touching the floor, and as an added challenge, I would also be carrying a brick. An additional element that I was not expecting and had to incorporate into my imagined scenario.
I'm on a cruise, but I'm dressed in a jumper and jeans, so it can't be that warm. I've also, the ship is sinking. I've got to go into the water, and there's one thing I refuse to leave behind, my big brick, which has been passed down from generation to generation and is worth lots of money. There's no reason to live if I don't have my brick. Goodbye, everyone. Women and children first. I guess the jumper's got to come off.
Good. I would start with the sweater.
Start with the sweater.
Yeah. Arms first.
I mean, arms first is some pretty humiliating feedback. needed to remind me how to take off a jumper. But the water and the pressure of the situation, it was scrambling my brain, just like in a real disaster. Somehow, though, I managed to break free of my jumper, and then it was onto the jeans.
Good, very nice. And then one last foot. Good.
I think I'm absolutely nailing taking my jeans off.
And then we're going to want to do it up so that you can use it as a flotation aid.
Okay.
So take your time. Make sure the zipper is done up as well.
Yes.
Yeah, the zipper has to be done up, otherwise all the air will just escape through your crotch. But then you tie the legs together and you whip the jeans hole first over your head in the water, scooping up as much air as you can. The waterlogged jeans catch the air and you can use the jeans as a flotation device. And I nailed it. It wasn't pretty, but me and the brick officially survived. And if you listen carefully to this next clip, you might be able to hear the bit where I swallow water and nearly drown myself again.
Is it tiring?
What is it? Is it tiring being fully clothed in the pool? Absolutely not. Right.
But I'd gone from very tense swimmer to bloody Bear Grylls in less than an hour. And I was grateful to Mina for that. I will be honest, I mean, I put my feet down approximately 15 times during the whole exercise. So essentially, I would have drowned. But I didn't see myself as drowned. I saw myself as a new man, a better man.
In this scenario, the fictional me, the man who went on a cruise to Morocco by himself, he may have died in the Atlantic Ocean, but a new Ian Smith has been reborn, like a butterfly, but one that can swim. One that, if it gets its wings wet, that doesn't sort of kill it. A new Ian Smith. A confident swimmer, a man who can unzip his jeans on water. And if I ever find myself single again, I'm putting that on my dating profiles.
I guess what I've learned from this is that I know the theory of how to survive in the water, but practically I don't think I'd quite be able to pull it off. But what I would be able to do is let other survivors know the key techniques, and at least then I've helped out the other passengers. I think the big obstacle to overcome would be convincing other people to listen to me while I'm actively drowning myself. It doesn't install a lot of confidence to see a man struggling while going, "Listen to me, everyone! Get your jeans off! Get your jeans off, get them behind your head! And whip them around in the..." I know I'm not doing it, but I would if I could. Well, the tide was high, but we held on. And I hope that I'm your number one stand-up comedian performing a show about stress. I feel pretty confident that I'm going to survive any watery challenges that are thrown at me in the near future. And I'll be calm and collected when God tells me to build a huge boat and put all the animals I can find on Facebook Marketplace inside. Especially the XL bullies. Get them packed in, it won't be stressful at all. I'll simply let them eat one of the less popular animals. I hope this episode has had the desired effect of making you desperately thirsty. If you're currently stranded in the Sahara Desert with only Radio 4 Light Entertainment for company, I'm truly sorry. This has probably made things worse. I've been Ian Smith. Thank you for listening. Good night!
You've been listening to Ian Smith is Stressed, written and performed by Ian Smith, with additional material from Mike Shepherd and Rhiannon Shaw, featuring Roisin O'Mahony and Alison Thea Scott. The producer was Benjamin Sutton, and it's a Daddy Super Yacht production for BBC Radio 4.
And tomorrow night, the comedian Ellie Taylor will argue that the United Kingdom should break up into lots of little kingdoms, Game of Thrones style.
BBC Radio 4 explores Brexit a decade after the referendum.
Most EU law still sits on the UK statute book with a slightly different name.
Beginning with a series asking if the reality matches the promise.
You've got a two-part story here. Some people doing well, but others not doing so well at all.
Looking at fishing, trade, academia, and the future.
There is a real opportunity here in light of the turbulence in the transatlantic relationship for the UK and the EU to do more together and to be more strategic.
10 years after